It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
Start on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
His house, the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner, PJ Tucker. Gordon by Gordon Branch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
The Los Angeles Lakers take a commanding 3-1 series lead over your Houston Rockets as they fall 110-100 in game 4 of this series. What is up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, and also the blog at ClutchCityCR. The Lakers were just flat out the better team in this game. Like, there's no other way to look at it. Literally, like, looking at the advanced NBA box score, guess what? The Lakers never trailed in this game. There were no lead changes. The Lakers controlled the game from the very beginning, apart from that one little, fake Rockets comeback in the fourth quarter where the Lakers kind of took the foot off the gas pedal for a little bit, I should say. But this game was all Lakers all the way. And just looking down all these different team stat categories, right? Let's look. Points in the paint, 62-24 in favor of LA. Second chance points, 17-3 in favor of LA. Fast break points, 19-2 in favor of LA. Biggest lead, LA 23, Houston 0. Team rebounds, 7-7, tied, can't even win a category. Team turnovers, LA's winning that category too, 2-1. Total turnovers, LA had 18, Rockets had 17, so Rockets narrowly edging them out in that category. And then opponents' points off turnovers, LA had 17, the Rockets had 19, or gave up 19 points, I should say, to the Lakers off of their turnovers. But this was a game in which it was a really balanced scoring approach, kind of from both sides, honestly. Like, Anthony Davis had a pretty monster game for LA, 29 points, 10 of 18 shooting, 9 of 9 at the charity stripe, snagged 12 rebounds, dished out 5 assists, had a couple blocks, did have 5 turnovers. So he was kind of a big chunk of the LA turnover problem. And then on the Rockets side of things, Russell Westbrook, 25 points, 8 of 16 shooting, 3 of 8 from behind the arc, just shooting way too many threes. He has no business shooting those, even when they go in. Doesn't matter. He shouldn't be shooting them. It's a bad shot. 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, 1 block, 3 turnovers. Really solid all-around game from Russ, though. Apart from the volume 3-point shooting, which I still will never endorse, he was active defensively. And, he didn't put a really strong imprint on the game offensively, but it really didn't feel like anybody did that. It kind of felt like it was a balanced approach from everybody up until that fourth quarter. And then Eric Gordon kind of caught fire a little bit during that fake comeback run. James Harden, 21 points, really rough night for him, just all around, still struggling to get in any kind of rhythm with this Lakers, mixing up of defense, the double teams, the zone coverage, it's still really throwing him off of his rhythm. 39 minutes, he was 2 of 11 from the floor, just 1 of 6 from behind the arc. Did have 16 free throw makes out of 20 attempts at the charity stripe. Kind of lived there. He had 8 trips to the line in the fourth quarter. Did dish out 10 assists as well as snag 4 rebounds, 2 steals, a few blocks. 5 turnovers, just, really, really kind of a turnover laden night for the team as a whole. 5 for Harden, 2 for Gordon, 3 for Russ. Covington had 1. Rivers had 3 off the bench. But this was that game where, just looking at things on the whole, you look down the entire box score and, everybody kind of contributed minus PJ Tucker and Robert Covington. And so you could point to those two guys and just say, well, if you'd gotten a few more open shots for them, then maybe, this game would have swung a little bit differently. But then you look at the Lakers box score, and it's basically the exact same thing. Anthony Davis jumps out at you, 29 points, but then everybody else down the line, LeBron, just 16 points, Danny Green, 10, KCP, 10, off the bench, Rondo with 11, Caruso was big. I called that this was going to be the Caruso game going into it. 16 points for Caruso on 5 of 9 shooting. LeBron also really, you know, flirting with a triple-double, monstrous on the boards, 15 rebounds, 9 assists. You know, didn't have to go supernova LeBron James like he did in Game 3 because it was a much more balanced approach for the Lakers. They kind of got everybody involved early. And the biggest thing, and this is what I want to tackle in this first segment, the biggest thing, and this is the most frustrating thing to see as somebody who, you know, talks about the Rockets all the time, is seeing a coach actively throughout a series make adjustments and changes. So the Rockets came out of the gate, and this has been the entirety of Mike D'Antoni in Houston, right? He's got a hell of a first punch. It's a really good first punch. We saw that in Game 1. Bam, first punch. Rockets take a 1-0 series lead, right? Everybody's on top of the world. And then they come back and they make adjustments. Frank Vogel makes the defensive adjustments. The Lakers, you know, institute those changes, and suddenly life is hell for Russell Westbrook. He can't find himself in this offense, and they are double teaming and trapping James Harden. Russell Westbrook has a really abominable game too, and it just kind of everything derailed for the Rockets in that game too. Even though all the role players showed up and they had a really great all-around game from everybody not named Russ, the adjustments were clear, and then they built on those adjustments in Game 3. JaVale McGee only playing 8 minutes in Game 3, Dwight Howard getting no minutes, and then here's the thing, right? They come to Game 4, Frank Vogel completely decides to say, screw it, we're not playing small ball. Or sorry, we are playing small ball, we're not playing big anymore, is what I meant to say. And kudos to him. It takes balls to change your entire makeup of what got you to be the number one seed, to change that up, to make that adjustment, because you realize, hey, this is a better way for us to play basketball in this matchup against this team. And here's the thing, right? It's perfectly acceptable if you're a Houston Rockets fan to be upset about the Daniel House situation. I still think, and I think if you're looking at it as an objective Lakers fan as well, it's perfectly fine to be upset with how the NBA is handling that. If the Lakers had a player who was being held out due to what, you know, these you know, odd shenanigans, whatever's going on, this investigation that has returned no concrete evidence, I'm sure Lakers fans would be rightfully upset as well if Danny Green or KCP or Kuzma was being held out, you know, temporarily missing 2 playoff games. So it's perfectly fine to be upset about that, yes. But what we're looking at from this Lakers team, one, they went into the bubble missing Avery Bradley, right? So that's a starter already gone. That's one of the reasons that a lot of Rockets fans wanted this matchup in the first place, and myself included, thinking, okay, Avery Bradley's not there. That's one of their elite guard defenders. That should make life easier for Russell Westbrook and James Harden, right? Apparently not. And now they are now missing essentially 2 more rotation players in Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee. And Frank Vogel said, you know what? We're fine. He still found a way to play a pretty balanced 8-man, almost a 9-man rotation with Taylor Horton Tucker getting 7 minutes in this one, who produced in his 7 minutes, the rookie producing off the bench in a, you know, pivotal Game 4 playoff game. And so just this is infuriating to see, because Mike D'Antoni doesn't make adjustments. And we're watching it now in a series where you're missing one of your forwards against a team that has a lot of size, where you're getting destroyed in the rebounding department, 52-26 in this game, and refuses to play Damari Carroll, right? Instead, now I will give NBA slight credit here. He did tinker the rotations a little bit to where it was more balanced minutes distribution across his 8 guys, but that's still not enough, right? The loss of Daniel House wouldn't be so detrimental to this Rockets team if they actually had a roster of guys where you could go 10, 11, 12 deep on any given night. But instead, no. Throughout the entirety of the regular season, it was a really stark 8-man rotation at times, 9-man rotation, if that, 9-man rotation in the playoffs when Russell Westbrook finally came back. But even then, you know, then Ben McLemore gets kind of cut out of the rotation, and suddenly you're back down to, you know, an 8-man rotation. It's a little ridiculous. And we're seeing the benefits from the Lakers of what can happen when you have a legitimate roster where you can go to your 10th, your 11th, your 12th guy and say, hey, we need you to produce tonight. You know, J.R. Smith could get minutes if needed, right? Jared Dudley could get minutes if needed. Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee have been producing all season, and yet they are sitting out because it's better, it's more optimal for the Lakers to have this flexibility in their lineup, in their roster, to better match up to Houston. And they're winning because of it. They're winning these games because AD at the 5 makes more sense going up against Rockets small ball. So credit to the Lakers. credit to Frank Vogel and the coaching staff for making that adjustment, coming out starting Morris over McGee in this game, and it worked out. They had a really balanced scoring approach, and they handled the game from the tip to the end, you know, as Clint Capella would say. Pause. This was one of those games where it just kind of, it felt like from the get-go, the Rockets' spirit wasn't right. And I'll talk more about that coming up here in just one moment after a quick message from our friends over at DoorDash. Look, sometimes you want Chinese and then they want pizza, and then there's a third person off in the corner who's craving froyo for whatever reason. Look, there's something for everyone on DoorDash. And the best part is you can continue supporting restaurants in your community safely, because there are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. And you can support your favorite restaurants through DoorDash, because right now our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off settings. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery. All you have to do is open the DoorDash app and pick your favorite local restaurant, and your food will be left right at your door. So remember, that's $5 off your order and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. So don't forget, that's code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. And we're back here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, discussing the Rockets game four loss at the hands of the LA Lakers, 110-100. And frankly, this was one of the most disappointing defensive performances that I've seen out of this Rockets team in recent memory, just because really the Lakers kind of got everything that they wanted throughout this game. There was no point where it really felt like the Rockets were able to string multiple stops together up until, again, the Lakers were in firm control of this game for, I want to say, about 42, maybe 43 minutes. And then there was that gap in the fourth quarter where the Rockets kind of mounted their little fake comeback. And I told myself I was not going to buy into the comeback. I was not going to get emotionally invested in it. And I'm glad I didn't, because it didn't pan out anyways. But they cut the lead, got it all the way down to as close as five, and were not able to capitalize from that point. And so defensively, until that stretch by the Rockets, they hadn't been able to string together any stops all night. And part of that is because the Lakers are doing this really, you know, it's a novel concept by putting somebody in the post, not with the idea of trying to score the basketball, but with the idea of facilitating the basketball to others. And you know why it's a novel idea? Is because the Rockets used to do this with Chris Paul. And that's why it hurts, because they would run those plays where they would dump Chris Paul down in the post and have him specifically just looking to create with off-ball action and generate a good look out of the post. And it's funny, because if you can do that with 6 foot Chris Paul, why can't you do that with 6'3", 6'4" Russell Westbrook, or 6'5" James Harden? Put one of them down there in the post, let them operate, and let them look for generating a good shot off of a backdoor cut or off of a flare screen for a wide open three-pointer or whatever. And then if the shot clock trails down, you know, you get sub 10 seconds left on the shot clock, then you look to create, especially if it's Russell Westbrook. If it's Russ, he should be great at that. Put him in the post, let him operate, let him look to try and get somebody the ball. And then if there's nothing there, then with 10 seconds left, he makes a move towards the basket from there. And then he can, you know, he can go to a bailout, you know, turn around, fadeaway jump shot if he wants to, which is still a terrible shot for him. But he can do that then. Rather than that being the go-to possession, get him in the post, look for getting somebody a clean shot. And that's what the Lakers did. They did that with LeBron. They did that with Rondo. They did that with AD. They put guys in the post. And then the option number one was to generate a good look for somebody else outside of the post. And then option number two, especially if it was Bron or AD, was for them to just face up and score the ball. Or for LeBron to back somebody down and just try and overpower them. And so it's seeing these different styles of offense where looking at how the Lakers' defensive scheme has really thrown off everything that the Rockets want to do. Again, in a game where the Rockets pride themselves on getting up as many three-point shots as possible. They don't pride themselves on being good three-point shooters. That's not what the deal... It's nice when they hit shots, But that's not their usual go-to. Their idea, their mantra is just to bury the opposing team in an avalanche of threes. And the sweet spot, the number that is the sweet spot where the Rockets are pretty much unbeatable, is that 37% mark. But if you're not getting up enough of those threes and still getting pulverized inside, again, 62 to 24 points in the paint in favor of LA, if you're getting pulverized inside and you're not winning the battle on the three ball, that you're not going to be able to make up ground there. Again, the Rockets lost this game by just 10 points, and they only attempted 33 three-pointers. They only made 28 shots in the entire game, but they only hit 14 threes, 14 out of 33 from behind the arc. That's just not enough. That's not enough volume. And the reason they're not getting that volume, again, is, you know, I reiterated this after the end of last game. The Lakers are running them off the three-point line. And because they're getting run off the three-point line, the Rockets are second-guessing everything that has gotten to this point. Everything that they have been taught, this entire system, that this is, you know, this entire offensive system is based on, if you catch the ball, you have to take the look if it's there. I've said this so many times this season, that the thing that kills the Rockets the most is hesitancy from their shooters. And in a scheme where LA is charging at you, and the reason the Lakers get away with closing out so hard on the three-point line is because, here's the secret, they know that the Rockets won't use mid-range. It won't happen. Except for Russell Westbrook, nobody else on the Rockets will shoot a mid-range jump shot. And you don't have to close out hard on Russell Westbrook because he shouldn't be shooting threes anyways. The Lakers know this. They have game planned for this. And that's why you're seeing them close out so hard at the three-point line, because there's no other, there's only a few threats on the Rockets that you have to actually worry about as far as being a dribble penetrator. It's Russ, it's Harden, it's Gordon, and it's Rivers. That's it. Anybody else that tries to dribble penetrate is going to likely turn into a turnover or a really bad shot put from PJ Tucker or something along those lines. And even Gordon Rivers are a little shaky at best with their drive. Gordon, when he gets a full head of steam, can be a handful on a drive. But when it comes from like a pump fake into a drive, sometimes it's a little shaky at best. And then Rivers as well, you know, he has to beat his defender with speed. He's not going to body and power through somebody at the rim. So unless he completely beats his man off the dribble, and again, credits Anthony Davis, he has been a monster deterring shots at the rim. There are so many times throughout this game where Gordon or Rivers, you know, would drive the ball in, see Anthony, and Harden and Westbrook do it too. They would pump fake, see Anthony Davis at the rim, and then just kind of like dribble towards the paint and then just, go back out to the three-point line. And that, having that level of a deterrent defensively, being able to kind of put the lid on a basket right there on the basket at the rim with AD and discouraging those drives, as well as being able to close out hard at the three-point line, that's why we're seeing the Rockets struggle, because there's a whole delicious area of the court, that mid-range, that is completely forbidden to be used by this system. And so we're seeing it exposed. We're seeing the Rockets system be exposed because they cannot get up the volume of threes that they need to be able to negate the Lakers' points in the paint advantage. And then we're also seeing shooters, when they do have even just a little bit of breathing room to get the shot off, they're not taking the look. They're second-guessing themselves. They're seeing a Laker defender charging at them, and they're either A, not getting the shot off quick enough, or then they're trying to pump fake and drive, which is a horrible decision because there's very few people on the team that actually have the ability to then finish at the rim, or even if they're not finishing at the rim, to then create off the bounce and try to generate another good shot for somebody else. But some of the most frustrating offensive possessions by the Rockets have been where, okay, person A drives, Harden drives, creates a look for somebody, they hesitate, they don't take the three-point shot, then that person drives, they create another look for somebody, guess what, that person doesn't shoot, then they drive again, they create another look, and then this happens two or three times until they throw, you know, an inadvertent pass, and the Lakers are, you know, monitoring the passing lanes and, you know, reading these drives, you know, and then they get a pick, and then they take off the other way for an easy two. You know, and sometimes that happens on the very first drive, but it's the most frustrating when it's multiple times on a single possession where multiple drive and kicks lead to what should have been decent three-point looks. They're not going to be these, you know, wonderful wide-open three-point shots, but that's okay. They just need to take them. Again, seeing PJ Tucker with just 2 three-point attempts is ridiculous. Covington with just 1 three-point attempt is horrendous. Westbrook with 8 is horrendous. There's no reason for Westbrook to take 8 three-pointers. Harden with only 6 attempts. You know, Harden finished the game with 21 points, but he only shot the ball 11 times. And here's the thing, right, is he doesn't get credited with the shot attempts that then get turned into free throws. So really, his, you know, if you want to count his free throws, let's condense all that down. Let's divide it, do the math. 16 by 20, you could consider that 8 more makes and 10 more shot attempts, basically. So really, Harden, in a realistic sense, was more, it was more like he was 10 for 21 shooting on the night. So you look at those numbers, and it's a little bit more, okay, yeah, his three ball wasn't falling, but he was still aggressive, getting to the rim, trying to generate offense that way. So it's not like he disappeared, you know, and that's going to be something that people are going to look at, because people are going to look at the box score and see, oh, only 11 shots, Harden choked game four. No, he didn't choke. He was just being aggressive driving to the rim because his three ball wasn't falling. But one of the issues there is he's just not getting enough attempts up. Harden's a guy on any given night who could, you know, average 10 plus 3-point attempts, but he's getting those attempts taken away and he's getting thrown off of his rhythm. For any John Mulaney fans out there, you got to throw him off his rhythm. He's getting off of his rhythm because the LA Lakers defense is not allowing him the lullaby dribble. They're not letting him get comfortable one-on-one in these sets. There were a couple breakdowns by the LA defense. Specifically, there was one possession where Harden had AD on the wing. There was no help defense that came over. Harden gets an easy two at the rim. There were a few breakdowns here and there, but largely they are doing a great job defending him as a team. And it's such a stark contrast from what we saw in round one, where Oklahoma City would only had, they had one guy who could defend James Harden, and then everybody else was food. And so they had Lu Dort as the primary defender on Harden, but when Dort wasn't out there, everybody else was food. In this one, the Lakers don't necessarily have a one-on-one defender who can legitimately stay with Harden like a Lu Dort type, but they are doing a phenomenal job as a team defense to slow him down and make things harder for him. And again, to not let him get his rhythm, because good scorers, the top stars in the league, the Westbrooks, the Hardens, the LeBrons, the Davises, they're still going to get theirs. But you have to make life difficult for them. And that's what the Lakers are doing. And Harden hasn't had an easy series by any stretch of the imagination. I made the claim that if the Rockets got Game 3 Harden and Westbrook for the rest of the series, if they were able to keep that consistent level of production, that the Rockets would win the series in 7. They didn't get either version of those guys in this game. Westbrook still had a decent evening, but it wasn't Game 3 Westbrook. Harden had an okay evening, you know, but it was not Game 3 Harden or Game 1 Harden or Game 2 Harden. It was just not. It was, and that's the issue with this Rockets team, is they need two things out of three possible things to happen to win a game. They either need Harden to have a really strong night, they need Westbrook to have a really strong night, or they need two, maybe three role players to collectively have strong nights. And in this game, I think Westbrook kind of passed the test for his like barrier. Harden kind of dropped the ball a little bit, and they did have a couple role players step up, but it just wasn't enough. But I think at the root of tonight, the issue was defensively. You know, going down by as many as 23 in a playoff game, you just don't give yourself enough chance to catch back up. You saw that in game two with the third quarter surge. Rockets kind of surge back, have a chance to get back into things, you know, by mounting that huge third quarter comeback, and then things just fell apart in the fourth quarter. So this is a very precarious situation moving into game five. Lakers have the Rockets on the rope 3-1, and with no information on Daniel House Jr., whether or not he'll be able to rejoin the team, it's these guys, the starting lineup, and then Green, McLemore, and Rivers. That's what they've got going into game five. And will these guys have enough left in the tank to try and push this series to a game six? Have our final segment coming up here in just a moment after a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. I want you to be as hype about protein bars as I am, and you can do that if you check out Built Bar. I'm telling you, you will not regret it. They've got so many awesome flavors: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, carrot cake, German chocolate, my personal favorite, the double chocolate mousse. You just cannot go wrong with it, because these bars, they're not like traditional protein bars. They're not gritty or chalky. They are soft, they're easy to chew, and they are covered in 100% delicious chocolate. It's basically a candy bar that's masquerading as a protein bar, because, or I take that back, it's a protein bar that's masquerading as a candy bar, because these things are jam-packed. They are low-cal, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, anywhere from 17 to 20 grams of protein in every single bar that you eat. And you can check them out now. Just go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your next order. So remember, that's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at builtbar.com. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. One area that I'm still a little bit perplexed as to why, and this was something that I talked about both with Ali Khambijani headed into game three, I believe it was, and then again with Matt Bullard, and one area that I still haven't seen this Rockets team try to get involved in is getting out on the break. You would think that a team that is scheming so hard to stop James Harden and the rest of the Rockets and that is doing a successful job at getting this team out of their rhythm offensively and preventing them from what's, you know, given them so much success throughout the regular season, you would think that that team would realize, hey, we should try and get out and transition a bit more because then we can go up against the Lakers' transition defense as opposed to having to deal with their half-court sets, which have been really, really good so far in this series. And instead, that's not happening. They are, and it's mostly Harden's fault because he is so content to just walk the ball up every possession. But even then, even when they do have possessions where there's that kick-ahead pass, there's so much tentativeness from the Rockets players when it comes to attacking this Lakers defense. And I think, again, a big chunk of that is having Anthony Davis be the deterrent right there at the rim. But for some reason, they are not willing to attack. And that's where you really miss Daniel House Jr. because he is not afraid. Russell Westbrook is also probably the only other Rocket that really isn't afraid to drive into the teeth of the Lakers defense. It doesn't matter if he's going to get his stuff blocked out to the third row where all the moms and babies are sitting. Doesn't matter if that's happening, and it doesn't matter if he's going to get fouled and knocked to the floor. Russell Westbrook is going to drive in with the intent to get something done. And Daniel House Jr. is the same way. We've seen it all season long with all the teases for the poster dunks where it looks like he's going to, you know, catch a body and then just barely misses the poster and gets fouled or whatever. But having that guy, having that fearlessness on the drive in transition, especially where you can just give the ball to somebody and say, go, get out there, an outlet pass, and then attack in transition when it's just, you know, one-on-one or potentially even one-on-two. But if you go in with enough speed and if you elevate high enough and just kind of get your body into the defender, the offensive player gets the benefit of the doubt more often than not. And another guy we haven't seen that from at all, really, is Eric Gordon. The first Eric Gordon special is when he dribbles the ball off his foot. That's Eric Gordon special number one. But Eric Gordon special number two is when he catches the ball in transition and he's able to get that head of steam going, that kind of change of direction dribble where he takes the first dribble with one hand and then does that, you know, kind of just, I don't know, like, I don't want to call it an over-the-shoulder crossover, but it's just a really, like, it's like Dribble Package 2 crossover where he just kind of, like, and then the ball just kind of, it crosses to his off-arm, and he just gets that burst of speed going the opposite direction and is then able to get his big, broad shoulders past the defender and finish at the cup. We haven't seen that from Eric at all. And that's one area where it would be great if he could unlock that portion of his game, but it requires the team wanting to play with speed. The pace of this game absolutely favors the Lakers. 96.7 in this game. That favors the Lakers substantially. The Rockets were the number two ranked team in the regular season as far as pace goes. The Lakers were around 11 or 12. So it's not like the Lakers can't play fast, but it definitely benefits the Rockets more to play fast. And the Lakers, again, the discrepancy in the fast break points 19-2 in favor of the Lakers, a lot of those fast break opportunities came off of Rockets turnovers. Those are opportunities where the Lakers are, you know, getting intercepting a bad pass and, you know, playing the passing lanes well and then immediately taking off the opposite direction. So the Rockets are a team that, you know, yes, they're going to generate turnovers and they want to get out and transition off those turnovers, but the Rockets are also a team that can play fast by simply just, this is going to sound really stupid, but just playing faster, like inbounding the ball quickly and getting down and getting into an offensive set with purpose, with decisiveness, trying to create a quick action before the Lakers are able to decide, okay, there's, you know, we've shaved, you know, 14 seconds off the shot clock. Let's throw a double at Harden. And then suddenly he's trapped, or suddenly, you know, they're forcing up a bad shot, or, you know, they're whipping the ball around the perimeter, trying to find the good look. And then there's a shot clock violation. The Rockets are taking too long to get into their sets. They're not playing. And this was what LeBron said after game one, after the game one loss. LeBron said, man, they play with so much speed on offense and defense. They are just a fast team, right? That was LeBron's words himself. I'm paraphrasing slightly. And the Rockets haven't played with that same level of speed since that game. It's just felt each game gets a little bit slower and a little bit slower. And I get it. You know, maybe the spirit's not all there. Missing Daniel House. There's a lot of ifs surrounding the team. You know, is Mike D'Antoni coming back as the coach next year? Maybe that's on the back of everybody's minds. But in this game, for about 42 minutes, the Rockets played like a team that wanted to go home. And they had no business winning this game. Even when they started mounting their comeback, had they mounted a successful comeback and actually somehow snuck a game away from the Lakers and made this series 2-2, the very first words out of my mouth would have been, the Rockets had zero business winning this game, because they played losing basketball for about 42 minutes and then decided to try and turn it on defensively in that final six-ish minutes, and they had a little bit of a run back then. So the series isn't over. It's not out. They're not completely out. But they have to play, the way that they play defense in the final stretch is how they need to play coming out of the gate in game five, or they are out of here. And they're going to be the final Grand Floridian, their banner for this season, all it's going to say is Grand Floridian champs. That's all they're going to get to take home this year if they get bounced in five games by the Lakers. So they need to come out with a bit more energy in game five, and, you know, maybe something breaks a little bit more their way. Maybe they get the anticipated Ben McLemore game, although Ben McLemore had himself this, you know, in a game where they needed one or two more guys to step up in game three and couldn't get it. It's funny that they turn around and they get all the bench support in the world in game four. Jeff Green with 9 points, 3 of 7 shooting. Ben McLemore, 9 points, 3 of 3 shooting, all from behind the arc. Austin Rivers, 5 of 8 shooting, 14 points. That's just how basketball goes, though. Sometimes guys step up. It was Rajon Rondo and Kuzma last game. For the Lakers this game, it was Alex Caruso and Rondo again off the bench. For the Rockets, the bench guys kind of stepped up, but it was a night where James Harden didn't really have it, turned the ball over quite a bit, and just wasn't the elite James Harden that he needs to be for this team to have a chance to win against a really talented Lakers squad. So I think that's where I'm going to wrap things up for today. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.